This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is quite a dramatic announcement from Save the Children. It has announced that it will be stopping migrant rescues in the Mediterranean, saying that it's due to a drop in the departures that we're seeing of the boats leaving Libya, as well as the worsening security situation from Libya around the Mediterranean.
And that is reporter Josephine McKenna speaking from Rome. Full details coming up.
Also, the displacement crisis in the DRC is worsening and causing unmitigated suffering for millions of people. And the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, who is in Ethiopia, says the Trump administration wants to find ways to partner with African nations.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the UN Refugee Agency says the displacement crisis in the DRC is worsening and causing havoc and unmitigated suffering for millions of people in key regions of the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
During the past 2 years, the UN Refugee Agency reports the number of people forcibly displaced from their homes in Democratic Republic of Congo has more than doubled to nearly 4 million. The agency notes almost 430,000 have been displaced in the past 3 months. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards tells VOA there are many factors behind this alarming upsurge of homeless people.
Clearly, the presidential election is among factors that one has to consider in the country, but that we can't draw a straight line between that and the displacement we're seeing elsewhere. It seems to be driven by so many different factors, including ethnic, political, land grabbing, and a host of other things as well.
The DRC presidential election has been postponed from November 2016 to April 2018, but groups opposed to President Joseph Kabila fear that date is now in doubt. Edwards warns the risk of further displacement is high because of widespread military activities, unrest, and violence fueled by ethnic and political conflict. Areas of major concern include the eastern province of Tanganyika, where more than 580,000 people are internally displaced, many victims of gross abuse, including murder, looting, and torture. Other key areas of forcible displacement are found in North and South Kivu provinces and in the Kasai region. In addition to the millions of internally displaced people, the UNHCR reports more than 620,000 refugees from the DRC have sought asylum in more than 11 African countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A four-month review of the U.S. refugee program that President Donald Trump authorized and today reopening the door to refugees. However, the government plans to toughen vetting measures. The State Department and Department of Homeland Security have yet to announce the details of the new screening measures. Thousands of refugees have entered the United States this year, despite Trump's two executive orders attempting to halt the program. The U.S. Supreme Court determined arrivals could continue as long as the refugees could demonstrate close family ties to the country. The Trump administration last month announced it will cut refugee arrivals for the next 12 months to 45,000, the lowest limit ever set for the program. During the last months of President Barack Obama's administration, the U.S. refugee program was on track to receive 110,000 people in the year that ended September 30th. Trump has argued that the refugee vetting system is inadequate. He has prioritized changes to U.S. immigration and deportation systems since taking office.
Well, Kenya made history when its Supreme Court nullified the result of the August 8th presidential poll as neither transparent nor verifiable. But the chaotic aftermath of that decision could convince other African countries to shy away from such reforms. VOA's Anita Powell looks at the Kenya situation from the viewpoint of other African democracies.
The aftermath of Kenya's August election is continuing to unfold, seemingly by the minute, before Thursday's do-over poll. But analysts say that the country has already taught lessons to other African nations seeking to further democratize. Yaki Siliers is the chairman of the board of the South Africa-based Institute for Security Studies.
For the first time, you had, based on a new constitution, a court ruling that basically held the executive to account, as should be the case in a constitutional democracy. Once the practical implications became clear, the result is a threat of violence and instability. But on the whole, the court ruling still presents a new benchmark where rule of law, constitutional democracy sets a new bar. I think other courts in other countries and emerging democracies are going to look at.
But it is too soon to know, says Africa analyst Rebecca Rumpel of the Chatham House Research Group, whether Kenya's experience will resonate as an encouraging lesson or as a cautionary tale.
I don't think amongst ordinary people there's a sense that this has gone wrong, that this is a failed experiment. I think more that the push to limit the constitution is coming from the elite level.
She says that the do-over poll will also determine how other governments react.
We have a kind of election that people, that observers view as not free and fair. On Thursday, for example, I think that kind of compounds a narrative of a kind of authoritarian trend in East Africa. You know, we've seen Tanzania, Burundi, etc.
This is Kenya's second presidential election since the adoption of a new constitution, passed after disputed 2007 polls. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Tanzania, police have arrested 13 human rights activists, including two South Africans, on allegations they were promoting homosexuality, which is illegal in the country. The activists were arrested last week and freed on bail, but then jailed later in the week. On Monday, they were denied bail again. Sanya Borneman is with Lawyers for Human Rights in Cape Town, South Africa. She tells VOA that the 13 were discussing a possible lawsuit.
It was a meeting related to a possible legal challenge in relation to HIV care. So it's very strange that the police are saying that the reason why the arrests were made was because there was a promotion of homosexuality going on.
Bornman says the arrests were unexpected and has shocked other Africa rights groups.
The general sense amongst activists at this point in time is that this is the first time in Tanzania that human rights defenders have been arrested in this manner, and also the first time that there are foreign nationals among those being arrested. So there's every indication that this is not something that has happened before, and I think that's part of what makes this case so difficult to understand.
Bornman says the raid appears to be meant as intimidation. The prolonged detention and reports that those arrested may have to undergo physical examinations for suspected homosexual behavior is worrying, especially, she says, for the Tanzanian activists. The South Africans have aid from their country's diplomats. Bornman says a great concern is what the arrest signal for the lawyers and their activist clients discussing any sort of legal case.
Even if it was a case that they were discussing, a potential case maybe around LGBTI rights, that shouldn't matter. You do not raid a meeting where human rights activists and attorneys are meeting lawfully to take instructions on a potential legal challenge involving human rights. It's unacceptable.
That was Sanya Borneman, an attorney with Lawyers for Human Rights in Cape Town, South Africa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. the displacement crisis in Democratic Republic of Congo is worsening and causing havoc for millions of people. And in the U.S., the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, who is in Ethiopia, says that the Trump administration wants to find ways to partner with African nations. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The international humanitarian group Save the Children announced it has suspended migrant rescues in the Mediterranean Sea as departures from Libya have slowed and security conditions have worsened. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the new development and what it means for migrants and refugees who are trying to cross the sea.
This is quite a dramatic announcement from Save the Children. It has announced that it will be stopping migrant rescues in the Mediterranean, saying that it's due to a drop in the departures that we're seeing of the boats leaving Libya, as well as the worsening security situation from Libya around the Mediterranean. But this is significant too because Save the Children have been operating a vessel called the Vos Hestia since September last year, claims to have rescued around 10,000 migrants on overcrowded boats. But this particular vessel was searched by Italian police on Monday as part of an ongoing investigation into the role that non-government organisations are playing in their role saving migrants, picking up migrants off the Libyan coast.
What exactly were they searching for?
Well, the organization is adamant that it has not been under investigation itself, issued a statement saying that it had had reassurances from Italian prosecutors that this search is not related to Save the Children. But it seems that police were looking for evidence related to some crew members on this vessel. As part of this ongoing investigation that we've seen, in August, police seized another migrant rescue boat operated by the German aid organisation Jugendrettet, and claiming that they had evidence of encounters between traffickers who escorted illegal immigrants to that particular NGO boat. Now, Save the Children says that it has nothing to do with this, that this is not related to the same thing. But it's an interesting coincidence that it has announced that it is suspending its migrant rescues. And in a statement, the organisation said that for too long it had been substituting the sort of safe emergency rescues that should have been carried out by European countries and was saving people, migrants, as we know, who are fleeing war, poverty and violence. Now, this organisation is adamant it's done nothing wrong. Jugendrettet also denied any wrongdoing, the German aid organisation, back in August. So it's been an interesting few months, and it's important to remember, I think, that Save the Children was one of the first NGOs that signed up with the Italian government on its demand that all these NGOs endorse a code of conduct. So it has been quite cooperative with the Italian government, as there's been tension between the NGOs and the government in recent months.
Also this year, Save the Children has rescued more than 10,000 migrants. So do you think this will slow the flow of migrants?
Well, it's interesting. We have seen a very dramatic fall. The number that have arrived in total this year is 111,000 compared to 150,000 for the same period in 2016 from January to October. Now that's down 25%. But if you look at the figures just since July, when the Italian government really clamped down on the flow of migrants, the fall is much greater. And we're now going into the winter months. Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, are sending off their vessel Aquarius today. But that's one of the few, if not the only, vessel being operated by an NGO in the Mediterranean at the moment. And that number of migrants, of course, is expected to fall even further as we go into the winter months now.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking with me from Rome.
Nearly 30 years ago, the polio virus paralyzed 1,000 children a day, So far this year, 11 children have been diagnosed with polio thanks to a global effort to wipe out the virus. The effort has produced amazing results, but as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, those behind it say it is not time yet to celebrate.
There are only two places in the entire world where children have caught polio this year, Afghanistan and Pakistan. The worldwide effort to end this disease is no less than Herculean, according to Carol Pandek of Rotary International.
Hundreds of thousands of frontline healthcare workers who are out there, you know, every day immunizing children in urban areas, in remote areas, in all sorts of settings.
Rotary International was the first organization to promote the global effort to end polio. At one time, in some countries, health workers risked their lives to immunize the children. Pandek says that is no longer the case.
What we found to be very successful is to use people from the communities, employ them to be the ones that are approaching families for vaccination because these people are trusted within the community, they're known to the community, and that seems to have really helped to alleviate some of those issues around safety for our vaccinators.
Dr. Flavia Bustreo with the World Health Organization says the challenge now is to get to zero cases and to maintain that level for at least 3 years, just to make sure the virus is no longer circulating.
We need to maintain a strong surveillance to make sure we detect every single case, and then the community react to every single case that appear. So the strength of that surveillance is a critical element for reaching the final end for polio.
Dr. David Nabarro at the UN says getting to the end is actually the hardest part of the campaign because governments and organizations have to keep up their commitment until there are no more cases.
We must remain vigilant and focused till we're absolutely certain that the last case has been found and that we have got everybody protected.
That's why the theme of this year's World Polio Day is We're Not Done Yet. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Food shortages are facing communities in northern Uganda that are hosting refugees from South Sudan. High prices and food scarcity are stoking the problem for consumers in Adjumani District. The district authorities are calling upon the refugee agencies to rethink the cash ration strategy, which they say has exacerbated the worsening situation. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Conflict and political turmoil are continuing to drive refugees from South Sudan into Uganda. Host communities blame the influx for the increasing food prices and scarcity in some parts of the northern and West Nile regions. In Adjumani district, where there are about 200,000 refugees, the residents and the South Sudanese have to scramble for the little food available. Ataku Charles is Assistant Settlement Commandant, Mungula 1, and 2 settlements in Adjumani district.
As of now, the food prices have gone high because of the increasing population. The food stuff is now lacking. We have scarcity of food items. So that means the prices of food items have gone up because there are many people and the production level remains the same. Coupled with the unfavorable weather we experience.
The World Food Program is currently implementing a rationing program, providing refugees with cash instead of food on a monthly basis. However, the refugees say due to high commodity prices, the money is not enough to get them through the month. Taban Wilson is a South Sudan refugee in the settlement of Mungula in Adjumani district.
The price has gone up, which the little money we have, before we reach the end of the month, we are already in a horrible situation. In the sense that you go to the market, you will not get maybe what you need, or the produce are not enough, the price has gone up, and we get problems.
However, Adjumani district officials blame the cash rations given to the refugees for the inflation in the district. Titus Jogo is a refugee desk officer in Adjumani.
During our interactions with the local government authorities, it's an issue that is coming up, that the money that we are paying the refugees is causing food commodities to go high. And since most of us depend on markets for food commodities, there's a high what? Competition, because there's a high demand for food commodities, and the food itself is inadequate on the open market, and what comes up therefore is the raising of what? Of the prices.
The officials want the cash rations reverted to food so that the World Food Program buys the produce directly from farmers during bulk harvest and stores it for future use. Idro Dominic Tako is the speaker of the Adjumani District Council and is critical of giving cash to purchase food.
We think that is a risky approach, because where will they buy this food anyway? If we are not so hospitable as Ugandans, like if our refugee policy is like in Kenya, where the refugee have no go zone, how will these people survive? Where will they look for the food? The limited food we have is all in our few markets. So we see that is a very big economic risk. So we are already in the process of trying to see how this could be revised. This food could be bought by World Food as it used to, and should be supplied to the refugees in an appropriate ratio.
Prices of basic food commodities like sugar, flour, beans and rice, among others, have risen to about 2 or 3 times the normal price. Consumers are hoping for a quick solution to the problem. This is Catherine Nambi for VON News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at Kenya's opposition protest and election confusion as the nation prepares for a repeat presidential vote. Citing irregularities, Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the results of the August 8th presidential poll. Understanding Kenya's presidential election on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Seventy-five years ago, Voice of America made its first broadcast. Today, we broadcast in over 45 languages all over the world. We broadcast in every means that people could possibly want to receive their news and information. We use radio still. We use television. We broadcast for the web, for mobile, and if new forms of communication are invented, we'll be there too. Our mission is really, really simple. We give neutral, fair, objective, independent news and information to people who have no other access to it. And we tell America's story. And America's story is rich and full. It goes from the entrepreneurial climate of Silicon Valley to our great universities to health and medicine and medical advances. It's also the story of America's diaspora, the people who came here from all over the world. I started my journalistic career more than 50 years ago, and here today at Voice of America, I remember just why I became a journalist. It's such a privilege to be working here with the great men and women who are telling America's story and providing neutral news and information around the world. I'm so happy to be here at Voice of America as it celebrates its 75th anniversary, and I feel proud to welcome it into the next 75 years.